Hey everyone, welcome to the Slice of Construction podcast. I'm your host, Jared Taylor. Joining me today is the CEO and founder of Safe Site Check-In, David Ward. David, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Jared. Thanks for having me on.
I'm excited to have you here. Let's dive right in. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm both new and old to the construction industry. After getting a liberal arts degree at UC Berkeley way back when, my first job as a programmer was actually with Bechtel Corporation in San Francisco, California. But after a couple of years there, I moved on to a 15-year career as a software development system architect, really through the first age of PCs, networking, and enterprise computing. I then moved into technical management for software product companies, database companies, telecommunication companies, and then ended up as a senior technology consultant. So I've worked with many different industries, over the years, and founded several firms. My return to construction began with the pandemic in 2020, when an old friend of mine, who owns a construction company, a general contractor in San Francisco, called me up and said, "Hey, it's great. We're an essential industry, but we have to follow these new health protocols." And my prior company had just developed an application for the pharmaceutical sector. So we were familiar with cross-platform mobile development and in the data privacy issues that are inherent in anything having to do with health and safety. So we were able to quickly build Safe Site Check-In in eight weeks. We cashed a check in 10 weeks, and we figured, well, time to start a new business. So that's how the company got started. And we continued to grow rapidly through the pandemic because companies needed to comply with the health directive, at least the ones that take safety seriously. And although that growth has sort of slowed with the end of the pandemic health directives, businesses that want to significantly improve their productivity are starting to look at us as a way of using digital technology at the job site to run a better business at lower cost. So that's our story.
A lot of people listening to this, not that that was an easy journey for you, are like, wow, it would be so nice to build something, have that check like come in, and then that's when we take that next step. But given your background and everything, it was a bunch of things that added up to that moment. So it makes total sense. Can you talk me through, and you mentioned it a little bit, but what do you believe, like, at that first experience with Bechtel, how did that impact you building this company? Like, were there key philosophies, lessons learned that added to what you're doing here?
Yeah, and I think it's set the wrong expectations. As Bechtel is a very large company, and it can afford to invest at a degree that 99.9% of the industry cannot. What I've discovered about the industry is that it is dominated by small and medium, sized construction firms that find it, for many different reasons, difficult to invest in technology assets, outside of certain core areas like finance and project management. So that's really reduced the uptake of all kinds of technology in the industry. There's, the problem of what I would sort of call multiple stakeholders, that, any given project, has an owner, it has a GC, it has subs, it's got a financer, it's got an insurance and bonding agent. You can have a dozen different stakeholders, even for a modest size project. And getting them all to agree on some sort of digital transformation, whether it's workflow or some other kind of automation, you know, makes it difficult. I think the other factor is that the culture of the job site is very different than the culture of headquarters. You know, when I was at Bechtel, I was working in, you know, the IT organization at headquarters. I didn't get out onto the job site. I was paid to write code. But what I've discovered with Safe Site Check-In is the culture of the job site is really determined by the trades and the people that want to build. They don't want to be bureaucrats. They see managing big data as something that's done at headquarters, and, you know, they hate paper, and yet they continue to still use paper because in some ways they like it because it's not digital. I would sort of, that's been the discovery over the last 4 years and how to overcome that.
Now, I'm assuming a lot of your buyers are probably these like late, slow adopters, right? And that's nothing against them.
Just
given the space, right?
Right.
So how do you get past that? Like, obviously you have a lot of experience in doing this. I mean, maybe how did you get past that in the early days, and how has that evolved since? Without, you know, you don't have to give us the secret sauce or anything, but
there is no secret sauce. It's a lot of hard work. I would put it this way. You know, for anything to be implemented at the job site, you need agreement by the project manager, the site superintendent, and the safety manager, or the people in those roles. And what you have to do is appeal to all three at once. There has to be something in it for all three of those people for something to be effectively implemented at the job site. In our case, you know, the super has to insist that everybody that comes onto the site check in, which means they have to be onboarded, you know, badged, digital badge in our case. And the super has to enforce that. Now, once that's enforced, the safety guy gets a chance to engage with everybody at check in with, do you have the proper PPI? Are you aware that this site has an open trench? You know, there's thunderstorms this afternoon, you know, whatever the conditions are. And the project manager doesn't have to then pursue the job site for updates and information. They know whether the sub showed up with a crew of six as expected or not. So we have to sort of, it's a more lengthy sale. You know, during the pandemic it was, well, we have to, right? Now it's because we want to, right? So it's a different process.
Where do you see the future of construction sites, you know, with the integration of technology? Where do you see kind of that future gravitating towards? And in that future, what role does Safe Site Check-In play as we move forward?
Well, I think there's a lot of agreement on this, that the shortage of experienced construction workers of all types, you know, whether it's the trades, PMs, safety, supers, you name it, that is what's going to drive change. Everybody is under pressure to improve productivity because of the historic labor shortage, most likely caused by the financial crisis 15 years ago, which caused a huge number of people to leave the industry when residential construction collapsed. So we've yet to recover from that, and are unlikely to anytime soon. This is an industry where experience matters. You can't just read the book and be effective. So everybody needs to improve productivity, and that's got to enforce change. One way that sort of owners and really the architect engineering side of the industry is doing this is with prefabrication, building information management, sort of trying to do is more on the design side to make less work on the actual build side. In our case, it's really to make the jobs of the supers, the safety, and the PMs easier, just increasing their productivity, and therefore they're able to manage the site and the project more effectively to greater profit and just get it done faster with fewer people. There's also, you know, robotics and automation. I'm on the skeptical side there because every job site is like unique, like a snowflake, you know, sort of deciding a piece of robotics that can work on any job site is going to be very challenging, you know, much less getting people to actually use it. I think also like certain kinds of use of innovative materials will help, but building codes have to change. You know, people are going to be suspicious of that. Drones can be used right away, but they're mainly, you know, it's sort of like, I can see there's been big changes in the site, but you may be unaware of the fact that the sub is actually understaffing by 50%, right? So it's drones are not going to be a sort of complete solution, even though they're cheap and easy, right? Anyway, so that's just some of my thoughts on what's going on.
You make a good point. You make a good point, David, on like, okay, there's all these cool new tools that are being developed, but each job site it's very much different. I've seen a couple cool ones like the bricklaying ones and, you know, that are able to, although they had a human like compete with it and it was pretty close. But... you know, the human's exhausted after, right? So
same thing with drywall,
I do like, even at a basic level though, you're seeing more and more of those like exoskeletons that people can wear. So they're, you know, the workers are getting hurt less and they're able to maybe even lift heavier in some cases without the additional stress, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I don't think the price of those have come to the point of like a drone, right? Where it's like affordable to have that and continuously use it.
Yeah.
What I wanted to also ask you, David, is before, you know, when we first like reached out to have you on the show, loved your background, but there was one thing in particular too that really focused in, and it was that, you know, you do SCORE mentorship, and I was telling you how I had such a great experience. So I have to ask you, being on as a SCORE mentor, you know, what is your kind of, I guess, best piece of advice for the up and coming entrepreneurs that maybe want to innovate in a niche industry or a heavily regulated industry, right? Like healthcare, construction, there are a lot of regulations to follow. Let's kind of focus on those kind of two spaces, I guess.
Well, yeah. So if people don't know, SCORE stands for the Service Corps of Retired Executives. Unfortunately, I'm not retired, but I still find it useful to feel very gratifying to help out, you know, other entrepreneurs. If I were going to give any brief advice, it would be understand that the fundamental of any business is selling a product or service and receiving payment for it. A lot of the people that contact SCORE sort of dive into detailed business plans and financial models and, you know, legalities, things like that. I usually guide people towards, are you sure there's a market? You know, can you, you know, even if it's just your friends, you know, get money for your product or your service? In fact, with, you know, sort of online Secretary of State sites and automated accounting and HR and payroll, the rest of this stuff is just sort of learning how to use the software application to, you know, to make it effective at a reasonable scale. So, you know, stick to the fundamentals. Is there a market? What's the demand? What's the characteristics of your customer? Do a lot of work with ideal customer profile, you know, with early entrepreneurs. You know your demographics, know the geography, and understand the price points that you can make money as well as your customer.
How important, you know, for you is the product feedback? I think that's also something when you talk to a lot of early stage entrepreneurs, they maybe overlook that piece, right? How important that feedback is, and not just taking the feedback, actually creating actions with it. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a two-parter for you. How important is that feedback? And then, you know, how do you best digest that feedback to a feedback? Feedback. Ooh, you see when I don't have the coffee, David, it's everything starts to mix in there. And then I guess part two to that is, you know, you've had all these leadership positions over the years kind of, actually answer that. And then I'll ask you my second question. I've learned not to do super long questions and then you forget the second part, right?
I agree that a useful way for management to look at their companies is as a learning organization. So your point about customer feedback, it's essential to learn. It's essential to learn about your customer and your market and your product and your pricing and every aspect of your business. And as a manager with your various direct reports and subs and such, it's to see that they're learning too, you know, that they're actually improving on the basis of the data you're getting back to them. I mean, that's part of our business pitch and of the value of digital data at the job site. It's allowing everybody to learn faster. And back to my point about the labor shortage and the essential expertise from experience, the faster we can facilitate that learning, you know, it's going to be the better for everybody in terms of, you know, productivity and addressing the labor shortage. So, see, there I tied it back to my business. So I'm proud of myself.
I like it. The other question I wanted to ask you that I tried to mix in there was around really team building and your leadership style. Mm-hmm. Maybe how has that evolved from when you first started versus where you're at today? I'm sure obviously you've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I know our audience really loves hearing about that, right? So would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I think like a lot of business managers, you know, we started out thinking of management as directive, meaning you do this, you do that. Okay, sure. But you know, laying out the work to be done, you know, turns out to be just the start. You know, the key thing is transferring responsibility, you know, of that task to your direct report, whether it's a manager or it's a line employee. Your business is efficient, and that whole sort of learning cycle is a positive feedback loop. When people take responsibility for the task and responsibility for learning how to get better at it. So I think, you know, my journey as a manager is really one of how do I lay out the work to be done as quickly as possible and clearly as possible, and then delegate and shift that responsibility, you know, to the team as efficiently as I can. And so you hear a lot of words about accountability and sort of teamwork and collaboration, communication. And frankly, as a technologist, I think that's great. It's the human part of the business, right? I mean, if we could automate it, it's, you know, people aren't involved, who cares? But what's interesting to me over the years is really the people issues. So that's been my journey, and that's the kind of advice that I would give a new person starting out.
Last question for you, David, transitioning back to Safe Site Check-In. It must kind of feel like a full circle moment, right? Looking back, as you reflect on this journey so far, are there any particular like personal satisfactions that you find in your work today that maybe you didn't find or weren't as apparent to you and earlier in your career?
Yeah, part of it is it was a chance for me to build a software as a service business, you know, which is a new business model, really, that's evolved over the last decade. I mean, I've run product companies, I've run service companies, but, you know, just sort of learning this new innovative business model, pioneered by Salesforce and others, it's been sort of personally gratifying. I think the other part is, you know, to help an industry which is a laggard. It was really disappointing to see that, you know, over the course of my life, the industry's productivity and safety record has really barely moved at all, you know. And sort of getting to the bottom of that and hopefully having part of the solution to that has been gratifying as I sort of, you know, reach the end of my career. But that's our mission, and built from our core values. So we're going to keep at it and see how we can help.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for joining me on the podcast here today and sharing your story and giving some early stage entrepreneurs some advice as well. That was obviously welcomed, and wishing you the best of luck. Let's definitely stay in touch, and hopefully we can have you come back on in the near future.
Thanks, Jared. Take care.